Like to invite and welcome everyone to our first meeting and open our first meeting of the House Committee on Rural Policy today, February 6th at 5 o'clock. And appreciate everybody for being here. First order of business is our organizational meeting. So I'll open our organizational meeting. Its main purpose is the adoption of rules. But before we do that, why don't we introduce people? We've got some new members of our committee, so we can just kind of go on down the list as part of this, I guess. So.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from Central Lane in Linn County. Very interesting district because it is a microcosm of Oregon, except for the desert. I don't have any of that.
George Gilman, state representative, District 55. All of Lake and Crook County, northern half of Klamath County, about a third of Jackson County, and a little bit of Deschutes County, places like Brothers and Alfalfa.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Vic Gilliam, District 18, Silverton and Malala. My semi-predecessor had the other part of our Senate district, Fred Girard, so it's a pleasure to be here. And I just always, when it comes to rural policy, I always want to pay homage to my mentor, a guy we call Rural Ray Neff, who taught me everything I know about rural policy.
Well, let me guess, he had the rural part of your district. You don't, but you're here to join us, right? I'm Jean Cowan, a representative from District 10, which is the Central Oregon Coast, Lincoln County, Northern Lane County, a little bit of Polk and Yam Hill.
Thank you. And I am Arnie Roblin, the chair from District 9, which is kind of the sand dune capital of Oregon. My district is really the sand dunes. It goes from Coos Bay to Florence and has parts of Coos, Douglas, and Lane counties. So, again, thanks, everybody. And you want to say a few words? This is our substitute person, Sandy. So,
I'm Sandy Teeley Circa, just sitting in for Marjorie Taylor, who is your
and we can have
staff person.
We're just sitting in. And Susan, you want to say anything about who you are or whatever?
I'm Susan White. I'm a committee assistant clerk.
Thank you for being here. So with that, I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move we approve the rules for the committee as printed. That's forth somewhere here we have.
Okay. Representative Gilman. I got to keep moving.
Keep moving these G's, right?
Representative Gilman has moved the committee rules as printed today. So, any discussion? Okay. Is there any disagreement with the rules? Then we will, as adopted. Thank you very much. With that, we will open a hearing on H.J.R. 101. Works as public hearing. We'll wait and see if we have anybody, and we'll have a short description of what this bill does by our administrator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. H.J.R. 101 urges the communication about transportation funding issues among all levels of government and stakeholders. This was introduced at the request of the House Interim Committee on Rural Policy.
Thank you very much. And with that, we have one person who signed up, Scott Reed from Oregon State University. Scott, you want to come forward?
Start with
one. Oh, sorry. Wrong one.
It may not be the one you wanted to talk about.
So, we have...
Still one person.
Andy Shaw, League of Cities.
Yeah,
oh, come on up. Please do. Both of you, if you want.
Come on.
Yep.
You can do a tag team.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. Briefly, I'd just like to commend the committee for this, considering this resolution. We think it's a great statement. We certainly believe that there needs to be coordination amongst the various entities. I don't think the general public really knows when they're on a county road or a city street or a state highway, and we need to work together collaboratively to solve the problems that the system have, which are considerable, and particularly with the crisis facing counties and loss of funding, which affects cities as well. It's especially important at this time to have that kind of collaboration. And, you know, I think it's going on. We're working well with the, we call it the...
Have a good meeting.
policy group with ODOT, where cities, counties, MPOs, and the members of the Transportation Commission come together and discuss issues around the system. That's going well, but having this sort of emphasis on the point is very helpful, and so we appreciate that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, committee chair and members. Andy Shaw with the League of Cities. We are also engaged deeply in the discussions about how to solve, primarily for cities and counties, I think, what is a road maintenance funding crisis. We've identified in this handout, you can see, $160 million worth of maintenance gap that cities experience. And rural cities in particular are hurting more so because they have fewer choices of revenues that they can raise than urban areas that are either have a large population coming through them, and they can raise gas taxes or other kinds of fees locally. On the back page, you can see a map that shows the kinds of investments that we would make, that cities would make with $160 million that would fill that gap. But you can see all over the state there are maintenance, safety, and capital needs that greatly exceed what we can fund. I guess my one comment would be simply that this resolution focuses very narrowly on the county portion of the problem, and it might be expanded to just talk about rural communities that need support in a number of counties where the payments from the federal government are going away. Cities used to share that money as well. Grant County and Lane County in particular passed on a portion of those funds, and those cities and those counties have lost that money already. It's gone because counties had to take action, understandably, to address the loss of federal funds. So those cities are already scrambling to find replacement monies for those lost maintenance revenues. So I just wanted to remind the committee about the significant needs that rural cities have, and commend your effort to highlight this problem for cities and counties in those rural areas.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Representative.
So, is it my understanding that both of you support the resolution?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, indeed we do. Our Association of Counties, supports the resolution.
Thank you.
Thank you. There was no one else on the list. Is there anybody who has not had an opportunity to sign up who would like to be on the list? If not, let's close our public hearing on HGR 101, and we'll open a work session on... Okay. Oh, it's posted. That's right.
Sorry.
We'll hold off on that. We will open a public hearing on HJM 100. And I know that there's a number of people, some who just came in, who have not signed up yet. So if you have not, please do so if you would like to speak to this one. And with that, we'll have a short explanation.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HJM 100 expresses support for all rural Oregonians and urges reauthorization of PL 106393. And hopefully.
We'll get some people on the list as well.
Yes.
We went through the other one pretty quickly. Okay, and now Scott, along with Mary Botkin. Oh, and yep, come on up. Mary, you're welcome to come up too. There's three.
Are you going to move this one today? Or?
Probably not. We'll move both tomorrow. But I'll check.
Sure. Cities.
Cool. I'll talk to you some more, but yeah, we can talk about that. So with that, Scott.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'm Scott Reed. Among other things, I serve as director of the Oregon State University Extension Service. We're concerned about the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act funds because of the potential impact on discretionary funds that counties have, some of which is made available to keep our OSU Extension offices open in the counties. As you may know, Oregon counties, our most significant local government partner, provides about 16% of the Extension Service budget, which really allows the support infrastructure, secretarial staff, and operational resources for the faculty that we deploy to Oregon's counties. The salary of the extension faculty that work out of the county offices is paid by state and federal funds. About two-thirds of our entire extension workforce live and work in Oregon's communities where they stay close to the people they serve and understand the issues best that help to drive the research programs at Oregon State University. In addition, about 20,000 citizen volunteers help us to deliver educational programs such as the well-known Master Gardener program and the 4-H Youth Development Volunteers. So having our faculty close to Oregonians allows us to do our work. Statewide, about 1 in 3 Oregonians are served with problem-solving education annually. In terms of what's at risk, the total amount of county-based funding that comes from general funds from 18 counties is about $3.8 million, and that consists of $3.1 in direct support for the infrastructure I described and an additional $700,000 annually that's specially targeted to youth and natural resource-based education around forest ecosystems, natural resource management, and sustainability. Although the true impact of federal losses is a bit uncertain, we estimate the risk annually to local extension programs from those 10 counties that would lose 10% or more of their general discretionary funds to be about $2.5 million. If that were to happen and we had to close or relocate the faculty in those 10 counties, that would mean 71 of our faculty educators and about 20 support staff would be displaced or eliminated. So what are we doing in the interim to help overcome that? Some counties have established extension and 4-H youth development tax service districts, and we are hopeful that we can establish more of those in order to be self-funded. If, however, we are successful in some of those counties who don't have such districts, it will be some time before those local resources are able to flow. In addition, in cooperation with the Association of Oregon Counties, and why I'm so pleased to have Mike MacArthur on my right, is we're developing a concept that we're calling Oregon Open Campus, which is exploring expanded relationships among local businesses, local leaders, and the educational system in order to better package and enhance the kinds of online educational opportunities that might allow us to continue to penetrate local populations. We are also developing assessment tools to evaluate the state of readiness in various counties as we prepare for different kinds of funding futures. Finally, I just want to stop and thank you and encourage others to recognize and to begin to prepare the action to prevent the losses that we'd be faced without the reauthorization of Public Law 106-393 as is done by HJM 100. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. Again, we'd like to thank you for this expression of support for rural Oregon and the reminder that you'll be sending to Congress and the federal government about their responsibility to Oregon because of the vast tracts of federal lands that have been set aside and were intended to provide income. We think that the 25% Act of 1908 and the ONC Act of 1937 were meant to provide resources for those counties and those acts aren't doing that anymore. And so this, as I understand, this memorial will be sent to Congress, and we support, the association supports that statement, and thanks you for this effort. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, and we've been working on this issue longer than I want to think about, through at least three presidential administrations from both parties. And I guess I just have to say a couple of things. You know the numbers. You know the problem. I like to think that I'm here tonight to talk for the people who live in your districts that can't be here tonight. And those are the folks who work in the county jails and the juvenile detention facilities and the mental health facilities and all of those public safety, human services, and road departments that are going to be, continue to be, or going to be further just slashed, cut, and burned. And the idea that the federal government at this point is continuing our funding 1 year at a time is no way to run an operation that is staffed with quality individuals. At best, you're going to get sort of people who pass through or people who are looking to move somewhere else. Because a year at a time means that there is no future for them, there's no security, and there's no stability for them or their clients. And I find this very distressing in counties like yours, Mr. Chair, where we're facing 60 to 70 to 80% cuts. And from a government that doesn't understand that Coos Bay's not on the superhighway, that they don't understand that it takes a while to get there, that high-speed light rail probably won't make it to Coos Bay in the near future, and that I-5 doesn't go through your county. You know, this is a challenging problem that these folks in D.C. don't get. And I'm just mad as hell. I'm mad that it's okay to subsidize tobacco farmers, and it's okay to subsidize sugar beet farmers, but it's not okay to subsidize timber people and timber counties. The only thing we do is create better air and lumber that you can build a house with. I find it absolutely appalling that they don't get it. And I'm looking forward to an administration that does get it and will do something to secure these funds for a long-term recovery of counties that don't have any other options. And I have members who call me every day and want to know if they're going to get a better deal, if we're going to get more money, if it's going to be more stable, if it's going to last longer. You know, Multnomah County loses a couple of million bucks. Clackamas County loses more than that. But they can recover in other areas. They have other economic bases that they can depend on. Most of the counties that we represent don't have any other option. So we either need to cut more trees, which I never thought I'd say was okay, but it is. You know,
did you get that?
I come from and you know, but I have to say that I also come from a timber family, and so I know that it's okay to cut a few trees. And we either need to cut some trees or they need to give us some money. And I have said this many, many times at the Democratic Party, and that is, you know, we're all Oregonians here. We all love trees. Some of us love them standing up. Some of us love them laying down. But we all love trees. I am now becoming a person who likes them laying down just as much as standing up. And I think that there's room for both, and we either need to harvest some trees or they need to give us money to keep them standing up because they don't get it both ways. And right now they're getting it both ways. They don't give us any money, and they've locked up the forest land to the point that we can't do much harvesting, and they can't have it. They can't have it both ways, and I don't know what we do about it, but Mr. Chair, I'm ready to circle the wagons anytime you say it. And I have members who will join us. And so, you know, we just need to figure out a solution. I think that this is a great message to send to D.C. And I'd like to suggest that we send it with about 10,000 people to deliver it and refuse to leave till they give us money. Okay. But, you know, that's not an official AFSCME position. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and let's figure out a way to get some money.
Thank you. Any questions of this group?
Yes, just a very quick one. You mentioned Kentucky tobacco farmers who live in a state where there is virtually no federal property. Oregon, of course, in Oregon, the federal government is the largest landowner, and they don't want to pay the rent.
You know what you do when they don't pay the rent?
Yes, I do. I suspect we agree about that, too. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
If I may add one other thing, and that's the association would like to express our appreciation for the creation of this committee and your time in working on these issues. And would especially like to thank Speaker Merkley for creating this, because I think it was after our trip to Southwest Oregon, I think the Speaker recognized that these problems are not just for rural Oregon, it's a statewide problem. And so we look forward to working with you on all these issues.
Thank you very much. Speaker Merkley, would you like to come forward?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the chance to testify, and thank you for that wonderful segue. And I know that I'm speaking to the choir here because you all have been out and met in many of the timber-affected counties and understand firsthand what is going on. But I certainly want to put my voice on the record and repeat the observation that we have more than we have six counties that get more than a third of their general funding. And the first trip that we took out during last session, during April, we went to five of those six. But those six are Douglas and Josephine and Curry and Coos and Lane and Jackson. And I believe we went to all of those except Jackson on that trip. And then we went, then there are a whole set of counties that receive more than a third of their funding on the transportation side from these funds. And that's 14 counties spread across the state, with some percentages in grant as high as 73%, and many receiving 60% and 50% and so forth of their funding. So I know that you're all intimately aware of the size of this, but I just wanted to again remind us that this is not one problem in one county. This is a problem that affects counties across our state, in many of them in very significant portions. And my basic frustration is that our federal government struck a deal with our counties. They said, we're not going to allow you to cut, but we're going to provide you revenues as if we were cutting these trees. And that social contract has now been broken by the federal government. And I know that if this was a contract with, say, farmers who were told that, you know what, you're not going to be allowed to farm your land, but we're going to pay you to keep it idle, they wouldn't be able to come back and say to those farmers, you know what, you still can't farm your land, but you know what, we're not going to pay you either. And yet that is what the federal government has said to Oregon and a number of other states. But Oregon is by far the most impacted. So we need to have a united voice, a strong voice, that says this is absolutely unacceptable, and that we send that message strong and clear. And this resolution is intended to do that. I applaud you in drafting it. I want to note that when this session ends, we should organize a flight. We've had a freedom flight to New York City. We ought to organize a flight and have every member of the House who is willing and able go together, present this resolution, and say to the federal government that we are all coming because it is totally unacceptable that the federal government is not honoring its contract with the people of Oregon. I was particularly struck out in the counties when there was a description of the significant impact. In one county, in Josephine, it was described a number of DAs would be dropped from about a dozen down to about two. The millions of dollars lost from law enforcement in general. I believe it was about half the deputy sheriffs that would be dropped. That the juvenile center would be shut down. That the library would be shut down. That forest fighting or other firefighting, forest firefighting or other firefighting, was not going to be able to be funded, and there was great concern at the upcoming summer. The national legislature extended 80% funding. for a year. And now we're at the end of that. And we face this issue again. But year-to-year funding is completely and totally unacceptable. It places our counties in limbo, in which it's hard to make any decisions about how to go forward and how to act. And as it was pointed out with previous testimony, just filling jobs and retaining the expertise to conduct the law enforcement and other county functions that occur is extraordinarily difficult in this. So we do need a long-term contract with the federal government to fill in. So I am hoping very much that on both the Democratic and Republican sides, that the nomination of the party's presidential candidate is not decided until May, so that we can have all those candidates out here on both parties and have that direct conversation with them about whether they believe in a federal government that honors its commitment and will honor its commitment specifically to the people of Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to comment. I appreciate so much your recognition of this particular issue. I wanted to let you know that I will be happy to make that trip to Washington, D.C. I actually made the trip before the initial passage of Public Law 106-393 as a county commissioner, and walked the halls of Congress begging for this legislation at the time. And you know, when we got the law passed, it was sort of like, well, we'll give you a little bit of breathing room, and then you have to figure out a way to make up the difference. But I think that you have very eloquently stated that we don't have that option of making up the difference, because we still have those federal lands tied up in a manner that we can't make them productive, and I fail to understand how we can be expected to find an alternative when we have as much public land that we can't see a resource or a revenue stream from. So I appreciate your attention to this, and I just wanted to say thank you.
You're most welcome, and I accept your offer, and I would be delighted if we could organize such a trip.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming. Yes. Are there any other people who would wish to speak to this? Come on up. Yeah, both of you, come on. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Roland. Committee for the Record, Bill Flynn, Carpenters Industrial Council. You folks are just now starting to feel the pain that our timber industries went through for the last 40 years. I've been fighting this issue since 1970. I've been to Washington, D.C. I've at least 20 times. And begging, I guess begging's the proper word. But I see no end to it right now. If you look at the papers just the last few days, after Oregon has spent millions and millions of dollars on private land, state land, estuaries, to supposedly restore fish habitat for the coastal coho and the steelhead, the federals still step in and put them on the threatened list. That's another slap in the face. Another cutback on logs that are available for our mills. And today's paper showed the little marble murrelet. This is a little critter that got blew clear out of Alaska. Never found its way home. There is a few of them out there. But it's just another object that they're using to shut our forest down. I've been talking about this since 2003. It hasn't gone away yet, but it will go away. 75% of the politicians in this nation could care less about the Northwest and their timber as long as they can have a picture of it. That's ours. I say that's ours. I don't know what we can do. I asked the Association of Oregon Counties. We should have filed suit. The main lawsuit should have been filed on the ONC lands. We either settle it now, or if we win, we win. If we lose, we lose. We've lost already. How much longer can we beg? Just the money we received from the federal government, our infrastructure still broke down. We lost our workers. We lost our mills. We'll never gain that back. Thank you. I'll answer any questions.
Thanks.
Yes. Chair Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Jessica Stevens, and I'm with SEIU, the Service Employees Union. SEIU Local 503 represents about 5,000 local government employees who provide critical services at the local government level. And we, too, have been partnering with folks you've heard from today and others on this critical issue for services that Oregonians rely on every day. We've already seen devastation in Jackson County and dramatic cutbacks to library services. We know that other services, especially juvenile and corrections, are at risk. And in March, we had the privilege of dedicating resources to sending a team of frontline workers to Washington, D.C. to partner with our members of Congress to lobby on this effort, delegations from around the country. We just want to say thank you very much for your attention to this issue. We'll continue to partner with the legislature, the governor, and our congressional delegation to try to find a solution to this problem, and we're looking forward to doing that work.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered from both of you if you could say a little bit more about your most recent impression or contact with the congressional delegation, if you can update us from your perspective on how effective or what's happening from their end. I know they've worked very hard, but I just would like to know what you think about that.
I think we've seen some incredible work and leadership from our delegation. We know that there are tremendous challenges in Congress because a lot of the funding for this is dedicated to a small number of states. Oregon, Washington, and California, I believe, are three of those states, in particular Idaho also. And so they face challenges from being a small group of voices on that front. We know, in particular, Congressman DeFazio and Senator Wyden have taken strong roles as Congressman DeFazio's district, I think, is one of those disproportionately hit. And so they've been incredibly helpful to us in terms of helping us, you know, decode and work our way through the process. And trying to also be innovative in figuring out compromises. When we were facing cuts already, they were able to patch through, you know, the one-year solution, which, granted, is not enough, but keeps us in the fight. So we've been really pleased with their efforts. We're continuing to partner with them. There's a long way to go, but they're being open and trying to be innovative about how we move forward.
Other questions?
I think you wanted to answer that question also.
I've noticed, and I've talked to all of them when they're out here and back there. When they're out here, they say, as soon as I get back, I'm going to start on this problem. I'm going to go directly here, and I'm going to go directly there. But I'll guarantee you one thing. Not one time have our five congressmen and two senators gotten the same room and spent the whole day discussing this problem. They have never, ever, ever once all sat down and really thoroughly discussed this. I think if they did, it would make a better plan for our future.
Other questions? Thank you very much. I will say that in part of the answer to Representative's question, when I was talking with some of the groups and listening to the people in the governor's work group, they kind of explained that part of this whole issue has been the pay-as-you-go issues in the Congress, and that you have to find where you're taking it away to do it. Mm-hmm. And that there are only a couple opportunities, one of which came up just recently when the president was wanting to do this package to help stimulate the economy. Yeah. And our groups, both Republicans and Democrats, they all got together to try to get something 1 year in the House and a multiple year in the Senate, and we're not successful at that time. We have seen a small amount in the president's budget, awfully small in comparison, less than what our state alone used to get. So we need to continue to push on that. There are a couple other opportunities down the road where PAYGO does not take effect. One is in the supplemental budget that's coming up in March, and I know we have people working on those issues. And the other time, there is rumor that there's another stimulus package that they're talking about this summer. Both of those have the distinct advantage of having, if we can have the pressure on them and get the right people to not be part of the pay-as-you-go scheme. And that would be helpful for this issue, because it's some money. So I think that the idea of getting together and hitting those appropriate times with people and stories, because I think that, as we've heard here before and tonight a little bit, the individual stories about people, what's happening, I think, move people a lot more than just there's X number of dollars. And, you know, I know I speak for in the trips we've taken, the counties would be more than happy. In fact, from their perspective, it would be better if that we were doing harvest levels that gave us the jobs and the money from the timber that was coming down. Because that helps the infrastructure, and that's another one of those discussions that we need to continue to have out there with our congressional delegations and others. And we know that there is a discussion with regard to the BLM and their requirement that they had to go back and look at their plan because of the Ninth Circuit decision. And there's a couple alternatives, and our counties have pretty much weighed in on those alternatives about what we should do. And that may be something we want to hear about as we go on down the road in this committee. The other thing that I really want to stress, and I appreciate our new people coming on, is that there is this task force from the governor's office, and Representative, now Senator Girard, is still on that, and we'll talk and see if we want to, how that continues, and I know that he's willing to continue to work, and we will continue to bring stuff back here to keep having that ongoing discussion, because I think I was heartened at the last meeting, just to get you guys up to date, with all of the ideas that were coming from the different agencies about things that they could do. Some needed legislative, some didn't, but I think that one of our goals needs to be, number one, I believe this is a responsibility of the federal government to help us solve that problem. But if, in fact, they aren't, we need to have a package together, and we need to include us as a group working towards that end if the worst-case scenario happens. We need to be ready with something, and Representative Cowan has expressed consistently the idea of the assessment taxation parts of the county government and how much it costs, and the fact that we have very little flexibility in how we deliver that service. And it has grown to be a bigger part of the county budgets than it used to be. So we need to continue to have those conversations. It's part of the conversation we're having with the governor's task force. I appreciate that. And as we get more information, I'll keep bringing it back to this committee. And if you have any ideas on issues, we need to, or if you can think of people we'd like to have come to our meeting, we'd love to have some opportunities to bring some other people here to talk about these issues.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm Rob Saperstein with Conkling, Fiskum, and McCormick, representing Boise Cascade, Associated Oregon Loggers, Douglas Timber Operators, and the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association. And my comment is I'm asking for your help. When the speaker sat here and described the social contract that the federal government is breaking, I took notes, and I'm slow, so it took me a while to think of that. It could be because the speaker is young, But he's absolutely right about a social contract. But that the welfare payments to the counties is not the social contract that was broken. The contract was made 60 years ago when the United States Forest Service encouraged the forest products industry to come out to Oregon and other places in the Northwest, and they promised a sustained yield of timber supply. And that's how we built up our rural communities, based on this promise of a sustained yield. In the 90s, when the Northwest Forest Plan was adopted and they reduced that promise to almost nothing, that's the breakage of the social contract. The welfare payments that the counties have received since 2000 is not the social contract. The social contract was in the 1940s and 50s when the forest products industry was built in Oregon based on the contract with the U.S. Forest Service to provide a sustained yield of timber. So I'm sorry that the speaker left, so, but yet you have to, I'm relying on you folks to point out that he's right on the issue, but he's 60 years late.
Well, and I think there was a part of that contract was that ONC counties, truly a contract. There.
Absolutely.
That money, that those lands were given to rail companies so that they would invest in those areas and have that land to be a productive part of those counties. And then when they didn't do that, they took it back and said, instead of giving it to the state to do that with, they said, we'll manage it for the betterment of those counties with respect to their timber. And the Ninth Circuit has even agreed.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the contract for ONC lands, as I think Bill mentioned, that would be easier to prove in court because the Ninth Circuit has already supported that. But what the speaker was referring to was the bailout deals with the Forest Service lands, and that's the social contract that was broken.
Any questions? Thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge that we also got a letter from the City of Portland that also expresses their strong support for HJM 100, and that will be entered into the record as well. And I think this is one of those issues, as we have been dealing with it the last couple of sessions, that starts to break down what we've heard of the rural-urban divide. Our urban friends acknowledge that this is something that they, too, agree with all of us should continue to happen, and we need to have a strong economy in the rural areas to help support the urban areas. And I think as we continue to have these conversations, hopefully that will continue to build that combination, because it takes all of us as Oregonians to push this forward. And it's going to take all of us as Oregonians, with the governor's work group, with this group, working together to come up with solutions if the worst case happens. My goal will continue to be, and I think that the committee is pretty good on this too, to force that federal government to start acknowledging what they need to do. And I would go all the way back to that previous contract with regard to how we use those lands. But in the interim, I'm willing to take some other help until we get there, because it seems to take forever to get a timber sale. So I think it's important that we continue to look at all of those issues. So, any other comments? We'll close the hearing right now on HGM 100. We have posted this for today and tomorrow, and I'm concerned that there may be people who want to be here. We'll wait and see till tomorrow, and I think we'll move the two bills tomorrow instead of today, just because of that posting. And I wouldn't want to think that there were people who were planning on coming and they didn't get a chance to give their comments. So, again, I want to thank the committee. Is there any other issues or descriptions that we would like to do?
I need to note, Mr. Chair, that I am unlikely to be able to attend the meeting tomorrow, but I wanted to express my support for both of these measures.
Okay. Appreciate it. Any other business to come before our committee today? Then thank you all, and I will adjourn this meeting of...